On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with UCLA research psychiatrist Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz.
But what about the other people in academia who the emperor goes by and they have to say, yeah, that's a wonderful suit, because they can't say the emperor has no clothes?
It's funny because there's a huge amount of historical precedent for situations like this. In fact, the human drama really is the playing out of this kind of situation. Worldviews become entrenched in our era because science is extremely good at explaining material aspects of reality. It came to pass that they came to believe that science should be good at explaining all aspects of reality. I think it's not unfair to say that any reasonable person would know that the science that works so well in the material world does not work nearly so well in the realm of understanding and explaining how human beings act and what human beings are and what it means to be a person. So, you know, 'twas ever thus.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on today's show, I have an interview with someone whose research I've referenced several times on this show, Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz, who is a research psychiatrist at the UCLA School of Medicine and is one of the world's leading experts in neuroplasticity, and in particular, self-directed neuroplasticity, which is a term I think sounds more complicated than it really is. It just means that in his research, Dr. Schwartz worked with people who suffered from OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and he taught them a meditation protocol, if you will, a certain way of meditating, of thinking about their thoughts that caused their brain to be rewired. And he knows this because he did an fMRI before they did this, and he did an fMRI after he did this, and he actually saw physical changes in the brain. And that's just one experiment that he's done. He's been doing this for a long time, has amassed an impressive body of research that shows quite conclusively this self-directed thought about thinking can actually lead to physical changes in the brain. So I didn't get to spend a lot of time with Dr. Schwartz, but I certainly did appreciate the chance to talk to him about his research and how it falsifies this mind equals brain silliness that we talk so much about. Now, you'll notice that this interview starts really kind of in the middle. We didn't do the traditional introduction and that kind of stuff, or at least that wasn't really suitable for this broadcast. But I think you'll follow along just fine. Here's my interview with Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. But how do you kind of capture how neuroplasticity just blows all this stuff up?
When one presents the self-directed neuroplasticity perspective to anyone other than essentially academics who really are professionally engaged in working out the deep details of ideological differences, and defines the mind, as I do when speaking to any general audience, as the choices and decisions that we make about our internal experience, and then give the brain full due deference as being the source of the vast, vast, vast majority of what that internal experience is at any given instant. You basically there have a paradigm that regular people, essentially any person who doesn't have a professional commitment to working out, as I say, the minute differences of ideological perspectives, any person who basically is trying to apply this mind-brain way of thinking to their day-to-day real life has no difficulty, no problem with that working definition. The brain is delivering experience as we go through time, and the mind is basically making choices and decisions about what to do with that experience. When one has a deep ideological commitment to materialism, which we all know is the regnant worldview of our current era, certainly among academic elites, and certainly among academic elites in neuroscience, and let's just leave it at that. People who are trying to explain things in terms of brain science, which to a very large extent also includes my base profession of psychiatry, they are committed ideologically to the notion that everything is the brain. So you get into this profound mismatch, and I've spoken about this mismatch, any number of YouTube videos of me speaking about it, etc. So there's no need to reiterate it. And
the mismatch is that it's self-evident to any person who has any kind of experience with meditation or even just basic contemplation that this is going on, and yet they're confronted with an academic explanation that is a stone wall in denying any of it. That's a reasonable
summary of the situation. So you get a mismatch between what you need to apply a mind-brain understanding to day-to-day living and this profound ideological commitment that people who essentially make their living talking about these things have to the fact that everything is coming from the brain. So it's a philosophical, ideological mismatch between the kind of worldview you need to actually live in the day-to-day world and this huge philosophical, ideological structure that the elites of our era feel committed to defend. And let's face it, the funding agencies that provide the funds for research, et cetera, there very much is a social structure, an establishment social structure that insists that this materialist worldview be adhered to. It's a prerequisite for playing the game, for having a laboratory, for doing high level research in our era. So this mismatch exists. A lot of people candidly are willing to say, it's certainly not really working out in the clinical realm. The clinical application of that materialist paradigm is not doing well. And I just don't see how saying much more than that accomplishes very much. And, what needs to be said has been said.
Great. And I appreciate you jumping on the line and responding at least a little bit. I want to try and capture that last bit in the form of a question, and feel free to answer it however you like. But what do you think it takes? I understand that you feel, because of this gross mismatch that you just described, gross in terms of the force of the two sides are mismatched as well as the explanation is mismatched. What are the next steps? What does someone do, not in your position, because you've managed to kind of transcend the nitty-gritty street fighting part of this, but what about the other people in academia who see this mismatch but have to look at it from the outside and the emperor goes by and they have to say, yeah, that's a wonderful suit, because they can't say the emperor has no clothes. How do we get past that?
So it's funny because there's a huge amount of historical precedent for situations like this. In fact, the human drama, to call it that, the human drama really is the playing out of this kind of situation where worldviews become entrenched. Human worldviews never really explain reality in completely. Obviously, what's happened is that in our era, because science is extremely good at explaining material aspects of reality, it came to pass that they came to believe that science should be good at explaining all aspects of reality. Science properly done in the way it's done to explain material aspects of reality does not explain human behavior particularly well. It's radically incomplete. Does it have a contribution to make? Definitely, it has a contribution to make. But I think it's not unfair to say that any reasonable person would know and have no problem saying that the science that works so well in the material world does not work nearly so well in the realm of understanding and explaining how human beings act and what human beings are and what it means to be a person, a human, a living, breathing, and even to use the word spiritual human being in the real world. So, you know, 'twas ever thus. I mean, that's really the point. I mean, this is always the case. There is always a mismatch between the worldview that is supported by basically the economic powers that be in any era and sort of how people, you know, more or less live their lives. This mismatch that I'm talking about, let's be clear, only one side of the mismatch has a professional commitment to supporting materialism. And that side of the mismatch is the side that really has a professional economic interest. I mean, it's the people who make their living supporting that perspective, you know, and that so it's not so hard to explain why they, you know, they are deeply committed to that perspective because they have a profound economic interest in that perspective. And otherwise, you're left with these very deep questions about, you know, why one perspective becomes the elite perspective in any given era. As I just said, I think in this particular case, you can understand it because of the success that science had in one realm, the material realm, that led to, you know, a general belief that science is going to give us all the answers. And since science works in the material realm, then we have to sort of make believe that everything is the material realm because that's the realm that science works in. And there are examples in the history of science where science has not been, you know, totally committed to the material realm. But again, not that we're going to start talking about quantum mechanics, because I promise you we're not going to start talking about that. But one can simply point out that in the 100 years, or just say in the years since the 1927 Solvay conference, when there's been a well-established, essentially, agreement that quantum mechanics basically does not lay even coherently on the classical materialist worldview. Well, you know, a lot of decades have gone by, but people are not using that awareness to change their perspective that the classical materialist worldview is the only thing that really matters when science speaks about how the brain works. So, you know, it takes a long time for these things to change. And, you know, this is the era we're kind of passing through.
One last question. It's kind of a biggie because you've brought it up. And that's that, you know, there's a lot of talk about paradigm change and consciousness being primary in us coming to that understanding. Do you really envision that ever happening, given what you just described as the huge economic incentive or at least economic infrastructure that's been built around the existing paradigm we have? I mean, let's get real. Can we ever really envision moving away from this?
Yeah, well, definitely. Yeah, the answer is definitely yes. I mean, in that way, you know, over a long period of time, I mean, I'm 62. Do I expect to live long enough to see this really change. Candidly, I don't. But I have a lot of friends in their 20s. So, you know, it's interesting. Lifespans tend to be getting longer. I myself do not believe that that's because of the success of science and working in the materials paradigm, but that's a different question about why lifespans seem to be getting longer. But so for people in their 20s now, who 100 years from now will be 120 and might well be alive at the age of 120, I think there's a reasonable chance that they're going to see something like that happen. I mean, there's probably going to be a lot of strife in between in the next 100 years. But, I mean, I guess I could conclude by saying, look, the advances in the research of this word that I don't use that much anymore, I still use it, of course, but the word mindfulness, I mean, you know, I've been interested in mindfulness for 40 full years. I've been working with it for 40 full years. And, you know, at the margin, there is genuine advance in research on the subject of mindfulness. Some of it is very, very good. A lot of it's kind of sort of mediocre, which is exactly what you would expect with, you know, how things always go when human beings are doing them. But, I mean, the advances that are being made are definitely consistent with people coming to deal with the fact that, again, to use my basic terminology, that the choices and decisions that one makes about how to focus attention have real effects on the brain. And so, you know, at the margin there, things are actually changing because as, you know, as, say, mindfulness becomes more acculturated into Western society, which is a long process that I'm trying to make a contribution to, this notion that it's all the brain is going to become less and less and less plausible, even to the people in academia, you know, who are doing that research. And in fact, I'm watching that happen. Without mentioning names of top research people, you can see the top research people who have been engaged in this kind of mindfulness research for, you know, over 10 years now, who, you know, used to be just staunch materialists, sort of, you know, what David Chalmers in his famous book calls haven't got a clue materialists. I mean, knee-jerk materialists. They're getting second thoughts, you know, and they're going, you know, there seems to be more to this than just the brain, because the brain alone doesn't seem to explain the data, you know. So progress. Things are improving at the margin. You know, there are definitely reasons to be positive.
Well, Dr. Schwartz, your work is great, extremely important and significant in this area, and I love the way you articulated it. So I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, and I really appreciate, you know, the way you're interested in it and that you're out there kind of willing to sort of engage with the side that finds this way of thinking unacceptable and kind of just try to do something about it. So I really appreciate that. So I've been trying to be supportive of what you're doing. So thanks a lot.
Thanks again to Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz for joining me today on Skeptico. One question to tee up from this interview, the mismatch. If you remember, that's the term that Dr. Schwartz used to sum up this kind of crazy paradox that we live in, that our whole life experience tells us that we are alive, we are thinking, feeling beings with free will, and we make decisions. And then when we try and match that with what science tells us, that we are biological robots, that our life is an illusion, and our consciousness, that is our awareness of ourselves, that awareness of our thinking, is not real. But Dr. Schwartz coined that as a mismatch, that we live our life and experience things one way, and then we're confronted with this stone wall of science that tells us it's completely not the way that we think it is. So the question then is, what do you make of the mismatch? How do you deal with it? What do you think about it? I guess that's more than one question, but you get the general idea. Of course, the place to weigh in on these questions is through the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. From there, you can bounce on over to the forum, leave a comment directly there in the show notes, or send me an email or connect with me on Facebook.
While you're there, be sure to check out our ever-growing body of previous shows, all available for download for free, and check out some of the interesting links we sometimes have to other material that's out there. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Skeptico. Have some interesting shows coming up. Do hope you will stick with me for all of that. Until next time, take care and bye for now.